Hello, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. For the next hour, you will enjoy the written works of Adam Carballera's creative writing class from Roaring Fork High School in Carbondale. We will be reading memoirs and poems inspired by the theme, Get Back Up. These works are all about overcoming obstacles, adversity, hard times, challenges, and not giving up. I am your fabulous host and poetic genius, Angel. The first poem is by Charlotte. It's titled, Like I Do.
Breathtaking, heartbreaking, ground shaking are your eyes, eyes that I only see ever so often. Often enough to know you, but far enough apart to wonder. To wonder if your new home, your new friends, are they as breathtaking or as heartbroken as I am? Do they feel the ground shake beneath their feet like I do mine? Are their toes digging to the ground as you walk past? Are they amazed by your will, by your heart, by your soul, by your pure fearlessness, by your ability to shake the ground as you walk past? Are they as breathtaking as I am? Can they call you their sister like I can? Do they know you like I do? Do they feel your life lacing their veins? Does their life dance to the rhythm of your laughter like mine does? Do they know your deepest lies like I do? Can they say that their family is yours like I can? Can they say that your home is theirs like I can? Like I can? 'Cause I can. I can say that I feel the ground shake when you walk past. I can say that my toes dig into the ground just to stay standing. I can call you my sister. I feel your life lacing my veins. I dance to the rhythm of your laughter. I know things even you won't admit to yourself. My family is yours. Your home is mine. You are my sister.
That was good, Charlotte. And now presenting the memoir Escape by Izzy Knauss.
It started with the sky. A huge storm brewing in the dark clouds, consuming the sky and the sun, and heavy, thick sheets of water pouring down, drenching the earth beneath. I could smell it even before it came, the wind whispering the secrets of the sky. The clock ticked 12:37 p.m. Sweat dripped down my face, humid air curling the wisps of hair framing my face. Twisting it into a braid, I slip on my indoors, grab my ball, and dive into the rain. I wade through long, thick stalks of tall grass, and they tickle my bare legs. Feet squishing through the mud, I squint my eyes at the landscape ahead, gray rain blurring the green leaves, brown bark, and purple leaves together. Spiders cling to webs glistening with dewdrops, and I duck my head to avoid them. The fence looms in front of me, rusted barbs grinning mockingly at me, and I slink under it, knees sliding through mud and ants drowned in the flood. Arching my back, I emerge on the other side, brushing drops of rain off my nose. I am coated. Steadying myself, I gaze at the field, a long, wide pitch of dirt and grass, extending past the sheets of rain onto the rainforest beyond. Huts, crumbling and cracked, line the edges of the field, and a lone tree waits patiently at the corner. Its ever-watching eyes guard me. The ball skips onto the ground, coming to rest in a puddle nearby, and I begin to juggle. The world melts away like candle wax, and my eyes are fixated on only one thing, the ball. I am lost in my own mind's universe, but soon this silent cosmos is broken by a young boy's voice. Hola, the little voice says. I look up, the ball dropping from my feet onto the soggy ground. A little boy runs up to me, a wide grin on his face, revealing crooked, gapped teeth and a dimple on his right cheek. I smile at him. Hi, do you want to play with me? His grin becomes even brighter, lighting up the rain around him like a lantern in a cave. Yes, please. Can my brother play too? I glance up at the set of posts, and a slightly taller, skinny silhouette peeks out from behind one of them. Yes, of course. The little boy skips over to his older brother, grabs his hand, and pulls him through the sheets of rain until they both stand right in front of me. Hola, I say brightly, grinning at these boys. Me llamo Isa, ¿cómo se llaman ustedes? Me llamo Victor, y él se llama Carlos. The taller boy answers shyly, obviously hesitant to be playing soccer with a white girl. Game on. We play, feet splashing through the puddles and mud pits, my feet in sneakers and their feet bare. Mud splatters across my torso as I slip and slide through the water. The ball runs, rolls, skips, thunders through the pounding rain. Victor was incredible. His precision, speed, accuracy, strength. He was my equal. I step back, watching these boys, clothes of rags hanging off of thin bodies, beaming at me, the bright blue and green Adidas ball resting at their feet. I am struck with a sudden wave of bittersweet melancholy. These kids, these living miracles, they have nothing. They cannot escape. They are stuck in a crumbling world of poverty. In a few weeks, I will be leaving this town, back to civilization, where I will get an education, live in a real house, eat full meals 3 times a day. I have had more opportunities in my life than they could ever imagine. I am so incredibly privileged. I come from a country of comfort and convenience, a land of luxury and lavish, a province of prosper and privilege. A hammer pounds my heart as I gaze at the boys kicking my ball around the field. How could I let my teammates go? How will I choose to carry them with me? Ay, chica, ¿estás bien? A voice breaks my thoughts. I look up. Twinkling brown eyes embedded in smooth brown skin stare back into mine, and his chest rises and falls with each hard breath. His little brother stands next to him. They look back at me, the torrential rain and crumbling huts and potholed field and dirt roads and ragged clothes and bare feet and caged passion reflected in their eyes. They cannot escape. Yet here they are, smiles lighting up their black and white world, making it become vivid, vibrant with color, with life. Their ability, their passion, their love for this game transcends this incredible poverty in which they live. They transcend this whole world simply because of the passion within their souls. See, I take a deep breath and smile at them. They smile back, and we play on. And the sun shines through the dark clouds, and the world is colorful and bright once more. I carry these boys in my heart every single day.
That was great, Izzy. Now presenting the poem called Look Right Into My Eyes by Cesar Torres. Take it away, Cesar.
Look right into my eyes, and you wouldn't think that by looking at me, you wouldn't know who I am. Look right into my eyes, and you'll see what I've gone through. Living without a father, going door to door, begging for money because our mother can't afford to feed us. I wake up every day, believing it's just a dream. Why is this happening to me? But this is God's plan. He knows I can get through this. Look right into my eyes, and you'll see what I've gone through. Put yourself in my shoes, and you can't handle the struggles I've faced. As a young boy, I always had my parents, but I started to realize that the things I didn't do in the past affected me today. Look right into my eyes and you'll see what I've gone through. Not being able to ask my father questions I had about life, I question life even more. I have learned a lot about who I am. Just facing the fact I can't live with my father made me into a stronger person. Tough times like these will scar me until I die. Finding myself in a dark, quiet room wishing for things to get better just shows me that I'm scared of what I'm trying to face. Look right into my eyes and you'll see what I've gone through.
On today's program, you are listening to students from Adam Carballera's creative writing class from Roaring Fork High School reading poems and memoirs inspired by the theme Getting Back Up. The next poem is called Demons by Lily Smalls.
Back when a demon living in your closet seemed to be your only problem. When you suffered no losses and were cursed by none. When flowers and rainbows and princes and castles were not just imagination but reality. When you finally can see that no one is perfect, mommy's no hero, daddy's no king. When recess becomes hide and seek, yet you are the hider and no one wishes to seek. When you finally have knowledge as to who you are, but the reflection you see is not who you aspire to be. When you search for something to fill the hole, but nothing explains why you just aren't whole. When that one puff of smoke exceeds just that one, so you puff more and more, but that feeling's not gone. And that one little substance, it turns into four, and your body can't take being without it no more. So the demon leaves your closet, and it enters your mind, but it won't stop fiending for a little playtime. When you know it's time for the demons to leave, but you're worried you will seize that love fun, and that little space will be filled by none. So you let the fiend demon play its games in hopes that it takes all your worries away. When you realize your crowd is slowly beginning to lose existence and that your playtime is good for no soul, that people are gradually dying and it's expanding the hole. When you believe all you have, all you'll ever have, is a life full of play and a mind full of demons, but you know you can't let it be that way. You can't let the demons that started in your closet and moved to your mind take over your whole life. You have to be brave when all you want is to play with that one thing that makes the feelings go away. You have to be brave through everything you have been through. You have to conquer your demons and believe in your flaws. When your mind fully opens, along with your eyes, you can see the good in yourself without any lies. When you conquer your demons in your closet and your mind, something to fill that hole may not be so hard to find. When it's your time to seek, but no longer to hide, the flaws that you see begin to subside. When you finally believe you are good enough, not just for others, you're just plainly good enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Lily. The next poem is by Owen O'Farrell, who is a locally famous teen poet. It's entitled, Spring Reminds Me of First Loves.
Perhaps it is because all my lost sleep weighs heavy in the corners of my eyes, and all our lost dreams weigh heavy on the frayed strings of our hearts, but I have not lost all hope for a better past. As I find spring dawning in all the dew on the grass, I am remiss that I cannot share it with you. The air is lighter now. Flowers are blooming, growing from the cuts we inflicted, lavender and lilacs where the blood once soaked our hands. Spring reminds me of first loves. Though it seems cold, the morning will peak those mountains, and while the sun's kiss is nothing compared to yours, it is still warm. I've worn holes in the soles of my shoes, chasing a memory of who you once were. I've worn holes in the soul of my heart. I miss you so much that I feel sick when I'm around you. At some point, your smile stopped feeling like the drug and started feeling like the needles. Someday, I will untie my tongue, and maybe then I will be able to breathe again. Maybe when I untangle the strings of this heart, I can finally let you go.
Now Lily will read "I'd Be Lying" by Leslie Nivarez, since Leslie couldn't be here.
I'd be lying if I told you my life's perfect, when in reality one of my brothers is in jail for making bad decisions. I'd be lying if I told you I don't miss him. Talking to him on the phone is not the same as doing it face to face. I miss the old days, the days you and I would go out and play basketball, the old days where you wouldn't go out and do drugs, the old days where we would spend more time together. I miss those days. The days where you would spend holidays with us. I know that you're in there regretting everything that you did. You've been making Mom worry every night that you wouldn't come home to sleep. My mom worrying about the things that people tell her, like, did you hear that your son was driving to Grand Junction and almost fell asleep and crashed? The worries you gave my parents was a bad decision, and now you regret it. Now that you're out, you've changed completely.
Thank you, Lily. The next poem is called I Am by Victor Perez.
I am protector of my family and friends when they stand alone in an active battlefield. I am the teacher of beatboxing and cutting toxic people out of my life. I am the lover of my family and friends when they need my support. I have the power of reading minds in my mind. I am the destroyer of fake people that are grinding you up. The creator of time travel. I empower my parents when it comes to difficult obstacles. I emote with anger that's trickling through my body. I emote depression, eating up the joy, all the joy I have. I emote confusion, leaving me lost in my own world. I stand for my friends and family when they are trying to prove a point. I walk with my friend Donovan, my mom, and my dad, and when it comes to backing them up. Today, my name means beating all the battles I've started. It means being victorious through life.
Hello, Carmando, the Warren Fork Valley, and beyond. We hope you're enjoying the written works of Adam Carvalero's creative writing class from Warren Fork High School in Carmando. Our class is sharing memoirs and poems inspired by the theme Get Back Up. These works are all about overcoming obstacles, adversity, hard times, challenges, and not giving up. I'm your host, Cesar Torres. The next poem was written by my co-host, Angel, now presenting 214 by Angel Villa.
My heart beats only for the day February 14, 2017, the day I finally got a girlfriend, excited and jumping when she said yes. My mouth drools for cheesecake, wondering to myself what makes it so good. My eyes glances at the color pink from all the cupcakes I thought about for the past year. My smile smiles at Cesar for making me laugh with all his dumb mistakes, like the time when he almost got beat up by Isra. My nose smells for the delicious smell of cookies while I take a bite. My ears listen to Bruno Mars' music, which has helped me through the sad and good times. My hand writes all the love letters I wrote to the person I loved, but never felt the same way. My lips taste the lips of my lover kissing under the moonshine while many people stare. My brain remembers all of the moments I've watched SpongeBob since I was in a baby carriage, up until my brother was born. My brother also beats for the time my parents would drive 2 to 3 hours just to watch me play soccer. My brother and sister fighting with each other, which made us all laugh at the end. My eyes stare at the color dark blue, remembering that time I sang in front of hundreds of people. My chest feels the thousands of hugs I gave to you, loving each one of them. My fist closed up from the time you said you wouldn't go with her, but you did. I smile from all the new friends that I got and the fake ones that left. My eyes tear up from the day March 29, 2017. That day she left, and I became a different man ever since.
Wow, Angel. Thank you so much. The next poem is written by one of our graduating seniors, Vanessa. Please enjoy her poem, Evil.
You cackle, like Michael from The Good Place. Sounds wicked, because you think it's funny to tickle me when I hate being tickled. We could be on the couch. your arm around me, making me feel safe, but I know I'm not safe, because at any moment, the diabolical thought might hit you. Let me tell you what being tickled feels like. It's okay for the first few seconds, but I soon tire of having no control, my face cramps from laughing, and I protest. This is when normal people stop. I repeat, this is when normal people stop. But you think it's so amusing to keep going. You're just quite the comedian, completely original. How'd you come up with it? Let me just tickle Vanessa until all she feels is resentment. Guess I can let it go, but it'll take some time, some healing. You'd say I'm dramatic, because I am, but I don't know why you'd need to tickle me. In fact, I can tell you why you shouldn't. Because one of these days, maybe I'll finally crack. Be so traumatized that I'll decide to live in hermithood just to protect myself. Or maybe I'll decide to get even. This is when you tell me you're not ticklish. But I'll find something else on the same scale, like burning your house down. Fine, I'm kidding. Mostly. But you know it makes me angry, yet you brush it off and call me cute. I counter with, I'm not cute. Fear me. But that never seems to work. The thing is, you have no problem making me laugh. You're funny. That's all there is to it. So it's almost greedy to steal more of my giggles through that sort of violation. Never tickle me again.
Thank you so much, Vanessa. That was fun. The next poem is by a friend of mine. It's called Down to Hell. I will read it for him since he couldn't be here. Down to Hell. I'd be lying if I told you that my father was a gift from heaven, because he's just a nightmare from hell. Let me take you back to 08 when I was 8 years old and my father filled my world with hate. Just a little boy with hopes and dreams, but things came in a rhyme and it was 9 p.m. My mother, a short and chubby woman with black hair and a tattoo on her right leg with my name on it, was wearing her nightgown, ready to rest as any other day, just by suddenly and loud knock came. Wearing brown work boots, green pants, and a work shirt, a tall man with black hair parted to the side came in. I can't believe what I had just seen. My father came bursting in our door like we were America's most wanted. Him holding up a bottle half empty, just making it worse. I just feel like I'm in a curse. I started to cry. My father screamed at me, but I'm also also holding a vacuum cord and started beating me with it. After he was done beating me with it, it was my turn. I stood up, pain in my body, tears in my eyes, and said, "You coward! You made me think you were my dad, but in reality, you were just a devil in disguise." My mom, fearful, didn't know what to do. She stood in the living room like a deer in the headlights of a car. Sirens sounded, and my father dipped like if he was running away from a nightmare. He was long gone, as you would say. But cops came into the door, asked my mother, "Is this your husband?" She said, "He's my ex." The police officer asked me, "Are you okay?" And I was in pain, but clearly said, "Yes, I'm okay." And the police officer took my father away. As Samara hit, the evil creature that I called my father was gone, leaving again with the dark angels where he came from. It seems like every time I think of him, I feel like he hits me harder than anybody could. But I think of it as it's about how hard you get hit and get back up. No matter through the rain and the pain, you gotta get your head up. Keep your head up. The next story is by another senior, Emily Johnson. It's called Black Ice. I hope you enjoy.
It was the early winter of 16. The wind was cold and bitter and nibbled at the tips of our fingers and painted our noses red with its frigid breath. We were walking along Main Street, the lights strung whimsically between the barren branches of trees, and ornaments were hung randomly amongst them. The temperature was low, so low that our breath condensed with every contraction of our lungs, with every puff of air leaving our chapped lips. Between shaky fingers, we clutched compostable paper cups filled with steamed milk, sweetened with thick syrups, and foamed just slightly at the rim of the cup. They were small, but they helped us to remain what little heat our numb hands still held, and when we brought the ambrosia liquid to our mouths, the warmth traveled through our body and breathed heat into our chests, blooming out like petals on a flower. It was a Friday, the first Friday of 16, in fact, the first day of the first month, January 1st. Children ran through the streets, giggles bubbling from their throats as they chased each other merrily around streetlights and the pant legs of their amused parents. We were walking slow, enjoying the sounds of laughter and faint music from a street performer parked on the corner of Main and 4th, pulling a bow over strings of a large wooden cello. I had been careless, not paying attention to the brick beneath my muckluck boots, not giving heed to the abundance of ice, the slight change in coloration of the ground, and by the time I noticed, it was far too late. I felt myself hit the ground before I felt myself falling. It went quick. One moment I was throwing my head back and laughing joyfully at a joke that my companion had spewed as she also chuckled. My heel hit the ice, and when I moved my leg in transition to step forward, the frozen material claimed its victim. Lack of friction caused a launch, my body simultaneously propelling forward while gravity pulled me down. I was terrified, not because I would hit the hard brick or because there were dozens of people around me, wide-eyed in the second it took for me to tumble down, but instead for the scalding hot liquid I held in my hand. No, I wouldn't let my hard-earned $2.25 go to waste, for the coffee shop had closed and I enjoyed steam milk far too much. I held my hand up, one arm going behind me, elbow bending, to break my fall so that my head didn't bounce off the stony ground, and the other bent to absorb the kinetic energy from the fall, hopefully preventing the spillage of my sweet drink. I had landed with a thump, an audible sound of shock escaping my lips, which I assume was a mixture between a human and a monkey. Glancing up, I could see that my cup was suspended above my head, gripped tightly in my hand, upright with steam still rising from its mouth. I sighed, a deep breath shuddering through my body as relief flooded my senses. After the half-second pause of my newfound position amongst the icy platform, I roared with laughter. My friends followed suit, clutching her stomach as she watched me comically attempt to scramble back to my feet on the black ice. I swiftly sidestepped away, setting my cup down and bracing my hands and my knees in order to regain breath after the gut-trembling laugh that just shook my bones. As the surrounding chuckles softly faded into the night, I sighed, shaking my head, picking up my cup, and continuing my way down the lit street.
Thank you so much, Emily. This is Kitty and Kay, owner-operator for 33 years. Thanks to membership support from people like you, you are listening to Andy Zanka Youth Empowerment Program. Currently, you are hearing stories and poems from creative writing class at Roaring Fork High School. These writings pertain to the theme Get Back Up. First up in our next group is Ruthie Brown, reading her story, The First Race.
My lungs had been ripped by the knives of cold air. My chest rose and fell, grasping at oxygen in order to feed my breath, and my legs numb with the pain and the tired that comes with hard work. My body carried on in a machine-like rhythm, moving simply because it had to. And yet, it would be so simple to halt, to stop, to slow. I had already lost, and I shook because the strength I thought I had left with the beginning of the race. The race that would form, as if from clay, my determination in many aspects of my life, including skiing, and yet it was the race that broke me, shattered anything I once clung to. But I kept thinking of the stories of heroes, the stories of mistakes, the story of challenges, but most importantly, the stories in which the characters succeeded and overcame the obstacles. Honestly, that day, it all seems a blur, pushed to the back of my mind where it can no longer torment me. My first ski race. It doesn't seem like a super big deal, but my God, I remember how badly my stomach hurt with the fear. I'm not quite sure what I was afraid of. Placing last? Making a fool of myself? Everyone would be watching. The butterflies had begun days before, when the thought of having to face this first race became apparent. I had only been training for the past month and a half. Even so, I grew up in Colorado with some of the most adventurous parents, and believe me, I had spent my childhood alpine skiing. I was really good too, or so I wanted to believe. If not good, I was certainly getting there. My parents and I wanted me to start racing alpine and training to do so, but it was too expensive, so I started Nordic. I had skied often when I was younger, but never constantly and never with coaching. It is so damn different than I originally thought. I was confident I would do well. I had spent an extensive amount of time on skis, but never skate skis. The first time I stood up with them on, I fell right back down. It shook me. In an instant, any thought of being prepared and doing well left me. But the race, as I said, was a month and a half later, and by then I had gained a little self-assurance. The morning of, my dad and I left for Aspen, the host of the race, and my ski team, despite the fact we did not live there. My father has always been my skiing partner, whether that be alpine, my dad snowboard with me, or Nordic. He had traveled with me to each and every afternoon of practice. So like the rest, we took this adventure on together. He was volunteering, and so, after I had settled with my stuff, he left. That was most likely when I really started shaking. I didn't have anyone to talk with. I was very shy, and although I had made friends, I wasn't so great at actually conversing with them. It was a mass start. 30 or so girls all ready, skate skis on, race suits on, and listening for the gun. Everything then seemed to slow down. As if in slow motion, I turned. "Each girl lean forward, poles planted. 15 seconds," called a man. I returned my gaze forward. In the corner of my eye, I saw my father, beaming, his hands moving together and his mouth shaping words, but I heard nothing. 10 seconds, and suddenly, everything seemed to be racing time. 5 seconds. I wanted to call out, "Stop, stop, I'm not ready, I don't want to let anyone down." It was too late. 4, 3, 2, 1, bang. Those in the front of the line up began moving, followed by the girls behind them and the girls behind them. Finally, I was moving as well, trying my best not to be trampled by other skis. Catching the tip or taking a pull to the foot, my heart beat quicker and quicker. All noise was blocked out and my focus was on the race. The first hill came and I flew up it. All of the girls, for the most part, were still clustered together, myself included. Some had broken off ahead and I saw them begin the climb. The hill seemed to soar upwards, length as terrifying as its height. Many of the young athletes had already begun to climb, and so I followed their example. I pushed my skis outwards and joined the race. Up I flew, the knives of cold air slashing at my throat and the cramps clawing at my side. My body ached and my legs slowed as the pain had caught them. I kept going, but a pace I had hoped to avoid, for it was getting me very far, very quickly. For it wasn't getting me very far, very quickly, and yet my body was being pushed to the limits. I saw a friend, who I was afraid to speak with. She was a first-year Nordic skier, and she had always been really kind to me. I had almost reached the top, and she was behind me. So I waited, or at least slowed my pace. I was very determined to be a part of the team, the Aspen Nordic team. Of course, my name was on that list, but I wanted to make friends, enjoy a conversation, and have fun. When she had caught up, I returned my pace, but my breathing was still ragged, and in an instant, she had passed me. I was now the last, and ahead I saw the pack of girls still moving together. A force pushed me to join them. Whether that be force of will or simply an urge to catch up, I'm not sure, and sadly, its force was not quite strong enough. I finished last, and the age group below mine had started 5 minutes after, and some of the faster skiers had passed me. Finally, it was over. I was so happy to have finished, and yet, the emotions breaking through and turning into hot tears were guilt and ashamed. Why couldn't I have done better? Not in this race, but in everything, in all aspects of my life, whether they have anything to do with skiing or not. I felt bad for my coaches. They had taught me so well, but I was doing so poorly. I felt ashamed that my parents had a daughter incapable of winning races. The opposite, in fact. I felt guilty that I had not trained harder, and I felt guilty that my teammates had such a loser skiing with them so frequently, slowing them down so frequently. This, however, was not the first time I have felt horrible, guilty about who I am. That might be why I'm so grateful for this moment. It is a shining light in what was darkness. My breath still ragged, the tears held back, but barely. I took my skis from my feet, and I carried them from the race course, setting them down. I went to my coach. I smiled a big smile. My coach slapped me on the back. "Congratulations, Ruthie. You did so well, and you skied great." I was really thankful for the encouragement, but guilt and uncertainty seeped in once more. "Excuse me, but do we have a summer program?" I asked. "I really, really want to get better so that I don't do as awful as I did in this race. Please. I'm prepared to do my best, work harder than I have because I want to do well. Learn. I love skiing." Now, I'm not quite sure if those are the exact same words said that day, but I know it was something along those lines, and that I meant every single word of it. We do. I'm not trying to be dramatic, but I am telling you the truth that this is what I felt and what emotions were at play. I really sincerely wanted to work hard, and in some sense, it was as if I had already started because every word said was meant, and I most certainly would carry through with my decision made. However, I would like to add, I thought working to achieve my dream would be like those women in commercials climbing mountains and then eating healthy granola, or the movie stars who look goddamn hot working out. I was utterly incorrect. That was one hell of a hot, sweaty summer and quite a bit of granola.
Thanks so much, Ruthie. This is KDNK, Carondo Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carondo, the Warren Fork Valley, and beyond. Our next poem is called The Sorrow of Gold by Ava.
I'm sorry. Is that what you'd like me to say? I'm sorry for what you've gone through, your tough times, your rough times, your tearful times, the times you didn't want to bounce back into being okay, back into the real world. Take a deep breath. Let the invisible substance fill your lungs until you could float. Float past Andromeda and almost far enough that our tiny, irrelevant world that you care so deeply for disappears. Don't forget that feeling of being full. You're not broken. The air you breathe does not leak. You may have been fractured, sprained, stepped on, and worse, but you fill those cracks with gold. Gold so much stronger than the weak flesh it replaces. You are not broken. You are far from broken. You are a piece of streaked art, your veins like a river running through your body. All those times you labeled yourself as broken were just cries for help. You are the boy who cried wolf. But oh honey, I'm sorry, because you are not broken.
That was great, Ava. You have been hearing memoirs and poems from Adams Carp's Creative Writings class. At Writing Fork High School, we hope you're enjoying this collection of teens' voices. Our last poem is called Silver Bridge by Madison.
The fragile rope splinters. The bridge of superstition spills into a canyon of endless dreams. Those endless dreams are the suicide of our realities. The reality is our own personal serial killer. But no, she is the serial killer of my reality. She is the silver bridge of superstition. Her split ends are just the rope that holds me together. Her smile is one to contradict me, to correct me on myself, to tell me I will never make it. There are a million like her, but there is only one of her. One weekend of silver months can bring you down, down a grand staircase of misconception. In an interview with the gold egg-laying geese can change your fears. A celebration where your thoughts become unclear due to the cold on your tongue. That's where she got me, in that trap of gnarly wire, where she threw me out on the bridge of superstition. The thread snapped, the fragile rope splintered. There I was being her, spilling into that canyon of endless dreams once again, but I climbed out of that damned canyon.
Thank you so much, Madison, and thank you, Carbondale, the Warren Fork Valley, and beyond. Thanks for listening to our stories from Warren Fork High School, and thanks for supporting KDNK and Andy Zinka Radio. Peace out.